The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.
Let's get through some of the stories trending this week. One particularly that caught the attention was that of Fianna Fáil Senator Lorraine Clifford Lee, who was outed for a number of offensive tweets from back in the early part of the decade, particularly in relation to travellers. Here's a little bit of what she had to say on RT's Morning Ireland programme this morning.
It was a long time ago, and I suppose we all evolve as people. And, you know, I'm now a mother, and I suppose I have educated myself a lot in relation to minority issues in recent years. And, you know, people make mistakes, and it's the recognition of those mistakes, and it's how you act. And since I have been a public person, that was in a private capacity, since I have been a public person, I have worked very, very hard in relation to minority issues.
Okay, Martin Beans Ward, what did you make of that apology from Senator Lorraine Clifford Lee?
Look, I don't think anyone can deny that she is sorry for what she said. I suppose as an individual traveller, I'm okay with that. I do think that it needs to go a little bit further, though. I don't think that just an apology, because, again, like I've been saying, apologies are self-serving when they're looked at retrospectively. When you're looking at something that you said or did a long time ago, that's, you're only serving your own benefits.
And she is a candidate here in the Dublin Fingal constituency in the forthcoming by-election. You think it's that that was probably the reason why people went and got the tweets and exposed them.
Oh,
but is that
of course
exactly the reason then as well why she feels she needs to apologise for it?
Well, no. Look, I'm a firm believer in allowing people to grow into the best versions of themselves. I think I've said this on numerous things, especially with Peter Casey, some stuff that was very, very kind of emotive and, you know, very, it was a hot topic and, you know, things were said. And I've always said the same thing. Allow people to grow in to be the best versions of themselves. Allow them to be educated. Allow them the chance to, I suppose, learn from what they did. We don't live in a society where we get through life without saying things that upset other people. As a stand-up comedian, I know for a fact in 10 years' time, somebody's probably going to come along and say, you made fun of my fat arse a couple of years ago. I don't really appreciate that. I mean, do we really want to demonise everyone that says things in the past that, you know, that they're regretting now? But conversely, on the other side of it, she did make those remarks, and it did demonstrate that she had a lack of understanding or a lack of, I suppose, compassion towards the travelling community. I do think that alongside an apology, if she really wants to prove that she wants to get over this and learn from it and to grow from it, and we can grow collectively, then do some cultural awareness training.
I think
she
is going to go to Pavey Point. She has actually made that commitment as well.
Well, that's fantastic news. You know, and this
which, in fairness, I think Pavey Point are also saying is she's the first politician in a situation that to actually do something like that.
Well, there you go. You know, like a slap on the wrist is fine, but, you know, it's better to learn from it. And I think if she's willing to do that, then I'm all behind it. However, we also need to remember that there is, at the moment, a petition from a lot of traveller grassroots activists on the ground that are saying that they're not too happy about Pavey Point allowing her in to make an apology. And from some of the stuff that's been circulated at the moment, an email from Pavey Point saying that Pavey Point will represent Pavey Point, I think that might have been an error when they were writing up the email, but I do think that more voices need to be heard on this topic.
Rob McDermott, I'm really taken by Martin's phrase there, allow people to become the best version mm-hmm. of themselves, that there is a tendency to rush to judgment, isn't there, for things that people did in perhaps different contexts many years ago?
Yes and no. I think the phrase kind of cancel culture gets bandied around a lot, and I kind of rail against that phrasing because I think it's not about cancel culture. It's often about consequence culture, and that people could say things like that. This in 2011, I believe, where the tweet when she issued the tweets, and there wouldn't be a reaction. And now we live in a society where, thankfully, a lot of people who were underrepresented and underprivileged now have more of a voice and more of a way of responding to this and saying this was never okay, and let's talk about how. But I think the idea of an apology has taken on a new meaning now because more public apologies have to be issued from famous people and people with public standing when they've done wrong. And I think something that I felt was missing from this apology that I just would have appreciated more was kind of her going into depth about how she understands what her remarks fed into and the kind of stigma and the prejudice that her remarks were perpetuating. Because I think you can't really issue an incredibly genuine apology if you don't think about the ramifications of what you did. And I think there's a way of saying, I'm really sorry this caused offence, and now I'd like to brush over this as quickly as possible. And there's a way of saying, I really I've taken this opportunity to think about why I needed to evolve, why I was that person, why I said those things, and here's how I've evolved and how I've tried to be better.
Mike in Cork says, as a breakdown recovery driver, three customers have all made comments to me saying she's telling the truth, etc. I notice you won't allow anyone on your show who agrees with her, but we're not obliged to provide balance by putting on people who make racist comments.
Yeah, I know. It's like okay. So because we have anti-racist people on, you need to balance that with a racist. I don't think that it works like that. And also, it's not actually a balanced debate because we all know that racism is actually a minority within Irish society. It's not as bad as it used to be because, as Ro just said, people are learning now. We're learning from mistakes that have been made in the past. Again, it's not about bringing on, look, we could have easily brought on 100 different people, you know, with lots of anecdotal evidence to suggest that, oh, they're justified in hating travellers. Well, conversely, we could have done the exact same thing with any minority group because racists exist everywhere.
People's humanity isn't up for debate. And I think that's a real problem that we're in now, is that we treat things like, oh, this is just a matter of opinion. But if you're dehumanising someone and if you're perpetuating societal and systemic stigma against them, that's not an issue of opinion, that's an issue of morality. And I don't think that needs...
But to be fair as well, one of the things she was saying was having a go at... somebody's hair saying, oh, she looks like
Ginger. It's also very misogynistic.
Like, absolutely. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned that because it is. And when she was on about the traveller weddings, and I'm thinking to myself, I had a look at your picture, Lorraine. You know, I was like, you could probably do with benefiting from a big pineapple wedding dress. You know, go and get on to Thelma with Ian. Maybe you might understand the others. She's about two hooped earrings away from ending up on the back of a sulky. And I can say that because
no,
I believe
that. No, you
can't
say that.
Why not?
You can't
should
say
we
that.
Have, should
don't
we,
think that's elevating this conversation have, that much, to be honest.
Should we have balance? Should we have somebody on to say no, she's not?
It's making a text in and be like, I'm delighted there was balance in that conversation there. No, I think
obviously I'm jesting. Obviously I'm joking.
We know.
But I think that the language she used, I mean, there was references to traveller women, but there were also just references, she was calling women sluts and referring to venues as sluts venues. And so, again, that was something that I just felt was missing from her apology. It didn't feel like she was delving into everything. It was, this has caused me the hugest amount of controversy, so I'll address that. And I think it is incredibly positive that she's going to meet with Pavi Point. However, I thought it was kind of striking.
Yeah, because saying, are we forgetting what she said about Dublin Bus? There was a comment about a ginger Brazilian dwarf.
I didn't actually see that one.
Yeah, there was.
For all my amigos brasileiros, me desculpa, us Irish people can be a little bit stupid sometimes. I heard that comment as well. I was like, that was crazy.
All right, look, why do we
move
on?
That's trending at the moment, actually.
Why do we move on? And something else has been trending all week. The Grafton Quarter. Did either of you come through the Grafton Quarter on your way here to the studios in Diggs Lane? For those people who may not be familiar with it, Grafton Street, the Christmas lights are up, the Christmas signs, but you're welcomed to what's now called the Grafton Quarter. And this has outraged people. Why, Ro? It's not like the name of the street's been changed.
It isn't the name of the street's been changed. But I think that for me, I don't really have a problem with people referring to it as the Grafton Quarter because it's referring to the streets around Nassau Street and Kildare Street. But I don't have a problem with that. But I think the issue is that, first of all, the Christmas lights on Grafton Street have become iconic, and the Nulla Cunna Ditch lights at the top of Grafton Street have become this beautiful moment of Christmas coming, and we're embracing this through Irish. And the Grafton Quarter, I mean, there are business owners have come up, I think Richard Guiney, who's CEO of Dublin Town Group, he said, oh, the businesses on Grafton Street have been referring to the area as Grafton Quarter for the refurbishment of the street that's been going on over the past number of years. I think there's a move toward that as a direct brand. And I think that's what feels kind of gross about this, is that it's taking something that's lovely and Christmassy and Irish and it's turning it into a brand. So it's kind of transporting the use of Irish language into something that favours capitalism and shopping. And that's going to be your greeting when you enter Grafton Street.
Martin?
Look, as a bacon and cabbage eating culture, I think you Dublin people have notions anyway. You know? So you can have your Grafton Quarter. It makes no difference to us at all. We're looking for the spire just to find out where we are when we come into Dublin. But look, actually, just on that, Grafton Street is a shopping district though, isn't it?
Well, and I suppose at the moment they're struggling against online sales. And if there's any way of actually trying to drag people in to shop in Grafton Street or the streets around or go to the bars and restaurants, given that the footfall into the city centre does seem to be down, Can you blame them? It's probably actually.
I don't blame them at
all. It's great publicity. This, all the people getting.
I don't know about the publicity part, though. I don't know. I don't believe. I don't agree with the publicity part. I think what it. Well, maybe I think more exposure, because it is a survival thing with shops at the moment, with bricks and mortar shops. There is this thing at the moment. You are fighting against online sales. So if I suppose some of those shops can draw some more customers into their shops and then maintain the level of employment for the people who work in the shops, I think it's a good thing. I don't think it's a watering down of the image of Dublin. I think in actual fact, on the flip side, it is that very mentality that watering down of Irish culture is something that we're also fighting against. I think we should change with the times. And if the people in the Grafton Quarter, much like the Latin Quarter in Galway, if you want to get behind that, then do. I don't know.
But I think I think the current moment in Dublin where people are being priced out of the city and there's so many cultural venues that are getting erased and eroded in favour of hotels, there is this sense that it's being taken, like Dublin is being taken over by corporations and is becoming a city for tourists and not for the people who live here. And I think it's just feeding into that very real anxiety and very real issue that's facing
Dublin.
Yeah, but
hold on. You saw all the fuss about the Bernard Shaw closing down on the south side up towards Portobello. They've now moved over to the north side, and they put out an Instagram photograph today of a bunch of fellas, hard shaws, and underneath it a picture of hipsters, and they're saying that they're civilising the north side. And all the people who were actually so outraged on their behalf recently are now turned flipped on social media today and saying this is an outrage and a disgrace, that this joke is unacceptable.
No, how are you conflating those two things? Yes, you can want to preserve a cultural venue and you cannot want people to make hideous jokes about the north side.
It wasn't a cultural venue. It was a pub that played loud music.
Oh, okay. This is the pub that outside all of the street artists like Mazer have made incredibly iconic throughout Dublin. And it's a place where a lot of people from... one thing that I find really interesting recently, Louise Bruton has done some incredible work around the gentrification of Dublin. But she was also saying that less and less venues are accessible now because venues that used to have a ground floor and an upper floor are now being pushed to only use the upper floor. So now less and less venues are actually accessible for people, which I thought was a fascinating point that she's been writing about. But it was this all-encompassing thing that is... also been here for years, and particularly, you know, during the time where so many people were moving to London and Sydney and Toronto and there was a dearth of people staying in the city, that prevailed, and now people are moving back, can't afford it, and it's disappearing. So I think it is mark of a cultural
landscape. Well, I suppose as a culture again, you know, I'm no different than the tourists to come to Dublin, but I can tell you now that when I look to get a hotel in Dublin, regardless of the day of the week, I'm left with looking at Airbnb, if Airbnb are even available, because there are no hotels within a normal price range. You pay huge prices to come just to come to see Dublin. It's extremely expensive. So we have to ask ourselves, as we grow as a nation, as we grow as a society with more people and an influx of other people, do we not need to start to accommodate people who want to visit Dublin City?
Which is why we have a lot more hotels, and hopefully that'll provide the supply. Listener says, Matt, since you came on at 4:30, all you've talked about is people who've been insulted. Is anyone happy anymore? I don't know what you're going to make of the next item we have. So, because this is about a story from, I think it's from London, isn't it? Of a woman or a worker who was fired for aiming a tirade at a woman eating boiled eggs on a commuter train. Roe.
Yeah, this story is a bit bizarre. It was a 6 a.m. train journey from Chelmsford, Essex into Liverpool Street in London. And this woman moved quickly and aggressively, apparently, into this woman's face. The woman who's originally from South America, and she was asked, first of all, if she spoke English, which opened up a charge of racially aggravated offence, but that was dropped. And she started saying, "You're disgusting," and complaining about her eggs and acting very threateningly towards this woman. So she was fined £750. And then she was ordered to pay
£750. How much was this woman fined for eating boiled eggs in a confined space at 6 o'clock in the morning? That wasn't her own kitchen.
That is not actually illegal.
Should it be though? Should it be, Martin?
Oh, I don't know. If it was like 3 day old cabbage or something, I might have something to say about it. But no, eggs. Eggs, look, especially when it comes to being on a diet. Look, we're living in a society where we're telling people to eat healthily, you know, and women are put under distress to look skinnier and to feel skinnier and to eat differently. And then when they do, you know, we have an issue with it. So it's food. It there's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah, but isn't there a time and a place for eating your food?
Breakfast time, what are you talking about? You
know? Have your breakfast before you get on the train.
It's all these afternoon shows you're doing, Matt. You're forgetting that you have to have breakfast. And sometimes, you know, us lay people have breakfast on the bus, you know.
I think there is. Yeah, I will look. This woman threatened. She said at one point, "You want to go outside?" Like, she was trying to start a scrap over this, and her argument was the eggs were making her feel nauseous. Like, move, carriage, or move. You was on a train. Like, move your seat.
It's not always possible, and particularly if you've got a pre-assigned seat, you're not going to find another seat to sit on. If you're on an airplane, have you ever had experiences on an airplane, for example, where you might have liked to have moved seat?
You're asking this because I told you I was on a flight from. I was on a flight to Venice and there was an American gentleman sitting beside me who I was at the window. And first of all, he was very excited because he had never flown over this area of Europe before. So he kept literally leaning over me and looking out the window. And I was kind of like, OK, you're fine. You're excited, whatever. But then I was trying to sleep and I woke up and he was clipping his nails and they were literally like falling in my lap. And the thing is, I just turned.
Fingernails or toenails?
Fingernails, thankfully. It could have been worse. But I just turned and looked at him and he instantly stopped. And I was like, if you stop, because I look at you, you know you're doing something wrong. So why are you doing this? I think the general rule is you don't leave anything behind, whether that is body parts, whether that is food.
To be fair though, Ro, I've often had meals that were less nutritional than toenails. So especially on planes, I can tell you. You know, and I've definitely gotten a bag of chips or once or twice in Ireland where they looked like toenails. So like, to be honest with you, going back to the egg thing, I think when somebody's eating, just try not to make a big deal of it and certainly don't ask them out for a fight, you know.
Sandy Cove Clean Coast Group wants a ban on smoking on beaches. What do you make of this suggestion, Martin?
As a smoker, I actually agree with it because I would be a nature lover, you know, and I do know that it does take 10 to 15 years for cigarette butts to degrade down to nothing. They're not biodegradable like most other things are nowadays. And yes, like they're ingested by sea life. And
of course, because when the tide comes in, it picks them up and it brings them out to sea.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, our people, looks, I know as well that some of the county councils across the country are taking bags of rubbish away from the beaches and people's ashtrays are being emptied out into the beaches and things like that. So look, if there's a sign that says, you know, don't smoke on this beach or, you know, you'll get a fine, it will deter a lot of people. It's not going to stop it, but it'll deter some people.
I think it's just so interesting that most of these areas are litter-free zones and that, but cigarettes have to be treated differently. And I think that just speaks to how, unfortunately, a lot of people who smoke don't treat throwing a cigarette butt somewhere as littering and they think it's fine. But I actually didn't know this was such a problem for marine life. And I think that's really interesting. I think in an area where we are talking about being more environmentally conscious, it should absolutely be a thing. And this isn't, I mean, Irish politicians are, Dunleary Rathdown County Council has said that they have no plans to pilot smoke-free areas. But countries including Spain and Italy have already banned smoking on beaches. So it's very easily done. And it's one of those things that I feel like even like smoking areas, there was such an uproar at the first idea of smoking area and people get used to it incredibly quickly.
I do apologise. I am not used to being shipped out to the bar and out the back of the building, you know, to have a sneaky cigarette as if it was a lump of heroin I was about to roll up, you know.
Have you considered moving to the e-cigarettes to try and get yourself off the tobacco? Because there's now all sorts of health issues been raised about vaping, including a 17-year-old boy having to have a double lung transplant, which has been attributed to vaping damage.
I think that is so sad. In regards to my own smoking, I've actually cut down. I'm looking to quit by Christmas. But in regards to vaping, I wouldn't go over to vaping because long before this story came out, there were a lot of reports about this new thing called popcorn lung, about the degradation of the lung, the inner lining of the lung and the different parts of the lung that were breaking down, like independent of each other, because of this vape that was being ingested. And also, it's not regulated well enough. We don't know what's in these juices. We don't know, like some people buy them online because they're cheaper. It's not regulated well enough. And I think it's a hidden and ticking time bomb. I think in time we're going to see an awful lot of people presenting themselves with the same kind of issues as this young boy.
Ro, just to finish, if we were in Japan, you would probably be told to remove your glasses, apparently, for doing this piece.
Because
Japan, apparently, workplaces do not allow women to wear glasses. This seems incredible.
Yeah, there's an idea of it gives people a cold impression of female shop assistants and makes them look less attractive. And so that is not desirable. And I will say, of course, men are allowed to wear glasses and nothing's ever commented on what it does to their appearance or public persona. Yeah, and there's been an uproar about this and there have been petitions against this. And yet politicians are standing by this and saying that they don't think. Japan's Minister of Health, Labour and Welfare reportedly said he was fine with policies like there's a high heel policy for a lot of retail workers as well in Japan, where women have to wear wear high heels. And that makeup politician well. Said he was completely fine with that. Of course, he is a man. He's in no way affected by these policies. So I think it speaks to a few things. I think it speaks to the idea of beauty premium, and that we people who adhere to conventional forms of beauty standards and beauty ideals and whatever culture they're living in, they get treated better and their employment opportunities are incredibly high, and they also have been shown to get paid more. And it's also this halo effect where if people conform to beauty standards, we think that they are more agreeable and we think that they're smarter and nicer and more competent. And this has been shown for women who go into work, for example, not wearing makeup. Their employers and employees, fellow employees, have been shown to not trust them as much. So it's this idea that they have policies to perpetuate this instead of dismantle it, which is really worrying.
Not a problem for you, Martin.
Oh, no, I always get away with wearing makeup anyway, so it's fine. Yeah. It's okay for me. But I do think, look, they're talking about a cold stare from a woman. Tell her what to wear, and then you'll get a cold stare from a woman, as you would from a man, just in the exact same way. I think it's crazy. But we are looking at a country that holds on to their traditions quite strongly, and they even have venues in Japan that won't allow foreigners in, which is also accepted over there. So, I'm sure there's a lot more behind this, but it's totally wrong in this day and age to tell somebody what to wear or what not to wear.
I got to leave it there. Martin Beans Ward, Roe McDermott, thank you both very much for being with us here on The Last Word on Today FM.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper on Today FM.